Okay, we're going to begin here, eight lines up from the bottom, on Yud Gimel Amud Bet. The Gemara here is discussing the Mamad Shloshtan, which is a kinyan that works, even though there seemingly is no kinyan over here. And the question is, how is it that it works? Or how is it that you get the individual to give over whatever rights they have to this other party? So for instance, in a case of a loan, we have a creditor and a debtor. The debtor subjugated himself to the creditor in the sense that he has to repay the money. And not only has to repay the money, he's encumbered all of his property to pay back the creditor. Now, if the creditor gives over that payment to someone else, to a third party, then what right does that third party have to come to collect from this debtor? Or since when is the debtor encumbered to that third party? So that's what the Gemara is trying to figure out, that this kinyan, b'man man shloshtam, where you have all three parties there, and therefore the sedating of the transference of whatever indebtedness works, how does it work, or how does it functionally create a new indebtedness from the debtor towards a new creditor or the new party who owns the loan? Time am I? Why does this work? Amar meyamar, nasek umer lo b'shat matan ma'ot, shabdan alacha l'didach o b'chol da'atu machmatach. It's the equivalent of him saying, at the moment that he takes out the loan, the debtor takes out the loan, at that point he says, I am shabadna alach, I am encumbered to you, l'didach o b'chol da'atu machmatach, to you and anybody who comes in your stead. So the way the Gemara is formulating now is that he basically encumbers himself to the creditor and any extension of the creditor, any party that the creditor so deems to be his collection agent, he encumbers himself to them. So Amalei Rav Ashi LaMeimar Elomiato, if that's the case, Hikna Lo Ladim Delo Havu Bishat Matan Ma'ot Hachinami Delo Kanu. So he says, well, now you're going to run yourself into a problem, which is if the creditor gives over the loan to someone who was not alive at the time of the origination of the loan. So say there's a father who gave out a loan, and many years later he wants to give over the creditor rights to his children, or pass it on to someone else who was born subsequent to the origination of the loan. If you're saying that the origination of the loan is what causes this to happen because the debtor at that time encumbers himself to the creditor and any extension of the creditor, but at least they'd have to be alive, the person that's there. Why? Because Tafilu Rabbi Meir, Damar Adam Makne Davar Shelo Bali Olam, Rabbi Meir Shita, who we will bump into many places in Shas, especially we'll see in Kiddushin as well, that the Davar Shelo Bali Olam, he allows you to make a kinyan on something that does not exist currently. Hani mila davar shiyeshno ba'olam. That's only true about something that is in the world, but yet to come. Aval davar sheino ba'olam, something that's not in the world at all, lo. So for instance, a tree that gives off fruit. So the fruit themselves don't exist right now, so that's davar shelo ba'olam. But the tree itself exists, and trees normally produce fruit, and so therefore we can say about Rabbi Meir, he says that you can make a kinyan on the fruits, even though the fruits aren't present today. But someone who's not born, or yet to be born, that you can't make a kinyan with. That's too far-fetched, too far away from ever having a samchuta dat, when a person's making a kinyan on something where you have no idea, oh, any future children that I will have, that you can't make a kinyan with those individuals, because they don't exist. And there's no guarantee that they will exist. So over there, Rabbi Meir agrees, at least according to the Shita of Rav Huna, in that case, you can't make a kinyan. So over here, also, when they stipulate at the time of the loan that the debtor gives the creditor rights to his property, plus he gives anybody the creditor so deems rights, at least it has to be at least someone who's alive at that time. Even though at that point he doesn't know who those individuals are, so it's davar shelo bali olam. But at least they have to be in the world or exist. So now you have people who are born afterwards, they won't be able to do this mamad shloshtam. And that the Gemara says that they don't think is true. Ella, Am Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi suggests another reason for it. Bayana deka mishtanyale ben milve yishana le milve chadasha gamar umishabdeid nafshei. So for the value, or in the value of moving the loan from an older loan to a newer loan, the debtor encumbers himself or re-encumbers himself to the new party. The assumption being that if the creditor now sells the loan to someone else, he's had a long history with the existing creditor, and that creditor is already tired and wants to collect from him, or has a particular day where he wants to collect from him. When he sells the loan over to a new creditor, it's a fresh start. And so the debtor feels that he's bought himself more time when the loan goes over to the new party, and with that value or consideration that the new party is going to extend the loan or give him more leeway in the loan, the debtor encumbers himself to the new owner of the loan. The question on that, of course, is obvious, which is, Amalei Huna Marbre de Rav Nechemya de Rav Ashi, Elamiato, if that's the case, Kagon Hani de Bei Bar Yashiv, the Kafte Vishakli the Altar. If you have these family, these Bei Bar Yashiv, what seem to be a very strong family or people who stood up for their rights, Kafte Vishakli, they tie you up or they have you whipped, and then they take their money immediately. They don't accept any delays in payment. Then, hachanami de lo kanu. So then if you sell it to that family, then maybe there should be no kinyan here, because the debtor is not going to encumber himself to this new party. He has no gain in the loan being sold to the new party, because he knows the new party is going to collect right on time. And that's true of a loan that has a fixed maturity to it also. If it has a fixed maturity to it, just because he sold it to a new creditor doesn't mean the maturity is going to change. The only time it's going to matter is if it's a loan that had no time frame in it, and the assumption being that when the loan was sold to the new party, the new party is going to give them more leeway. So a lot of assumptions in this, and again, not just because one family does it. It's just an example of this mafia-type family that goes and collects, but it's true in general. There's no way in this case to know whether there's really going to be a benefit to the debtor, and there's going to be a large number of cases where there is no benefit to the debtor, and the debtor will not encumber himself to the new owner of the loan or to the creditor. And so for that reason, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense that this would be the case. And the Gemara says, "V'chitei mochanami," that you would differentiate, depending if he gets benefit or not in the sale of the loan, you would differentiate, "Imkei natata devarecha l'shiurim." Then you have a problem, which is in general, when the Chachamim institute a takana, gezerah, they try to make it as objective as possible, to take any subjectivity out of it. As soon as you involve subjectivity in decisions, you know that the line gets pushed, and then you have a lot of confusion about it. So the Chachamim in these areas tried to say what we call lo plog, that it should be this way across the board. Now that's true when the majority or the large or vast majority of issues turn out to be the way the Chachamim state. Then we would say in the minority cases that they're drawn along with the Takanat Chachamim. Over here, where it seems that there are going to be a large percentage of loans where this is not going to be relevant, you can't say lo plug anymore. There's just too many cases where it's just not going to be true. So that can't be the explanation for why Mamad Shloshtan works. Ella, and here's the reason. Amar Marzutra, Hani Tlat Mile, Shavinu Rabbanan Kehilchuta Belotaimo. The Rabbanan instituted these three things as halachot without any reason. As Rashi says over here, Hilchuta Belotaimo, Ilu Kabla Moshe, Halacha La Moshe Misinai. He equates it to the concept of halacha l'moshe misinai, which is something where we have halacha that has no reason or no explanation for it. It's simply, this is the way that it is. She'ein tzarich l'teit batam. They don't have to give any reason. Tosafot is more explicit. We'll read it in a second. Tosafot says that there are reasons. It's just that the reasons themselves are not sufficient grounds to create a kinyan. So the Chachamim established that the kinyan works. There was a reason for it, but it's not functioning through the normal vehicles of kinyanim. It's functioning through vehicles like hefker, beit din, hefker, or what's called takanat ha-shuk, an ability to enhance commerce, or the ability to keep a liquid loan market. The Chachamim instituted this so allow for these things to happen, but not that it's working through the regular channels of kinyan. So what are those? Those items, chadaha, one of them is our case, mamad shlushtam. The next one, Beidach, Damar Yudah Mashmuel, Kutev Kol Nechasav Lishto Lo Asa El Apitropia, that a person who writes all of his possessions and gifts them to his wife does not inherit all the possessions, but rather she becomes the executor to the estate, and she gets to determine how the estate is used or how it's distributed, but she certainly does not get all of the property. We'll discuss this in 1 second. Beidach, and the third one is, Damar Av Chananya, Amesi Isha Livno Agadol Bebayit, Kana'o, person that marries off his oldest son inside of the house, this son acquires the house. Right, we'll work our way backwards through these. First of all, the last case is really a case that is in Bava Batra. And the Gemara there speaks about it, and there are a lot of stipulations about exactly when it will work and how it will work. But the basic idea is when the father marries off the son, he builds a house, or there is a house that exists, and he marries them off in the house. The kubun of what we call the chuppah today, they had a beit chatnut, which was a house that was specifically made for the married couple or the couple to get married in. So if he has such a house and he marries off his son in this house, then in essence, what the Gemara says is that he gives it over to his son. Even though there's no formal kinyan, even though there's no formal giving over here, the context indicates that that's his intent. Now that is all by a number of qualifications. Has to be his oldest son, that there's no other son that has been married before. Has to be that the father has no possessions inside the house or no claim yet left on the house. And so on and so forth. So it makes it obvious that this house was designated for the son. And the son acquires it even though there's no kinyan over here. The case before... Yeah, or they get, or I don't know, but that means they celebrate afterwards, like the, sudot are in the house. Uh-huh. Whatever it is, it's like, they call the sudot, there was a, cheder chatanim. Many times in their house, they used to build an extension onto the house and put an extra room on the house for the married couple. Right, to live in. So the question is, who owns that extension on the house? Right, is it the new couple that lives there or the parents? So this might be a part of that, meaning that here it's talking about a whole house, but they're talking about the cheder. What was the intent of the parents? Does the son acquire it because of the nature of it? Or is it only a temporary residence for the children? And that will depend on this sugya in Baba Batra. So the way Tosfot phrases it is here, he removes everything that he has in this house. So then the son basically relies on that to be his, or in the modern law, it's called detrimental reliance, which is that if a person is relying on what you've done and then assumes based on the context of what's happening that you've gifted it to them or you've given it to them, and then they act based on that, then if it's a reasonable assumption, they acquire it, even though technically there was no gifting, there was no actual giving or obligation generated. Meaning that the father doesn't owe the child anything. He doesn't have to give them the house. But nevertheless, because of the context in which the father takes everything out of the house and he gives it over to him to live in it, the son can make a reasonable assumption, samcha le dato, he relies on the fact that this means that the father really intends for him to have the house or keep the house, and therefore he treats it as if it's his own house. If he goes ahead and then sells it to raise money or do something like that, is his sale a good sale? So he relied on the fact that his father must have given it to him or intended for it to be his. Again, it's all qualified by the Gemara and Baba Batra about exactly what the circumstance is. In the case of the Isha, Tosfot over here notes, and others note, that the case is only true where the father has children. And our assumption is that a father would not give his wife all the possessions and in a sense dispossess all the children. And the only reason that he's giving it to the wife is because he wants to give her a nachat ruach, he wants her to be in charge of the estate, but not because he wants to dispossess his children. So in that case, the gift to the wife is not literally a gift in which she gets everything. It just makes her into the executor of the estate and not the true owner of the estate. And the children will be the possessors of the estate in the long run. And maybe even she has the right to decide how to divide it up or how it goes to the children, but it's got to end up with the children. If it's her vis-a-vis any other Yoresh, then the truth is that we would assume that it's hers. That when the husband gifted it to her, he gifted it to her for her to keep, versus any other Yoresh, and there you don't have this whole principle that he wants his children to have it, or you assume that he wants his children to have it. So in the face of children, this would be the case. Without children that are there, then this would not be the case, even though there are other inheritors in line. Nevertheless, when he gifts it to his wife, he intends for it to be gifted to his wife. Again, here there's an assumption that a person would not act in this manner to dispossess his children, and therefore the assumption of the gift to his wife is that it's not a full-fledged gift, but rather just way to make her feel good and make her into the executor of the estate. Mamad Shlushtan, as we've discussed until now, it's pretty obvious what the use or the value of it is that, as Tosfot said there, it's either takanat ashuk or it's an ability for creditors to feel at ease in lending money because they know then that they can pass that along to their other creditors, or they can pass it along when they need to pay something. They have an ability and a liquid way to move the loan over to another party. So because of that, they'll be more willing to loan. Or in cases of takanat ashuk, people will be more willing to transact if they know that there are ways for them to pass around obligations in between them. And because of that, that free flow of credit helps the market. And so the Chachamim established Mamad Shlushtam, which has a certain amount of understanding because all the parties are there, meaning that both the creditor, the debtor, and the acquiring party are all there together. So everybody knows what's happening. So that's important. And then on top of that, Tosafot said in yesterday's daf that Omer Riva and the Rabbeinu Tam both say Dibamad Gimel Kana Bal Korcho Shelove Oshel Nifkad, that it works without the permission of the debtor or without the permission of the Nifkad, the one who the Pikadon is with. So it's not an issue of getting the permission of the debtor. It's something that the debtor has to be present, so he knows who his new creditor is, or he knows who his new owner is of the object that he's holding. But other than that, the debtor or the nifkad has no rights of refusal or veto rights over here. He simply, here's your new creditor, here's your new collection agent, they're going to take it from you. But again, this has a lot of value in terms of keeping liquidity in the markets, as well as, again, today, also, this ability to move things without proper kinyanin helps a lot, because this is your typical case, again, with a collection agency and other things like that, where you want the loan to be able to move to another party. Machloshtam is a way to help that situation along. Again, today it's not as easy because the debtor is not always present. You need the debtor present, and that's a harder thing to orchestrate. But in their time, where it was usually local people, it was easier to orchestrate that, and it made it easier to move the loans along. So Amalei Rav, the Rav Acha Bardula. So Rav says to Rav Acha Bardula, Kava Domorika Itle Gabech, I have a kav worth of saffron by you. Now, kav is a pretty decent sized measurement, and saffron is very expensive and is very, very small or ground up spice. To have a kav of morika would have been a significant amount of saffron, which seems unlikely in this situation. Probably was a way to say sort of measurement of this saffron, but not literally a kav worth of saffron. So Rav says, I deposited with you, or you owe me this saffron. Yaveh leploni, give it to this other third party. Technically, Rav is the owner of this, whether he is the mafkid or he is a creditor. And Rav Acha Bardula is the either debtor or the nifkad, where it's deposited. And Rav says to him, give it over to this third party now. I no longer are going to get it. I want you to give it to this other party. And it was done in the face of all three of them. He says, Ba'apei kamina lecha telo hadranabi. I'm doing this in front of you, or in front of all of us, so that I can't back out of it. Michlal, the Gemara here assumes that Rav was making an additional statement, basically committing that he won't back out of this. Because he's saying, I'm doing it like this because I don't want to back out of it. Implying that whatever he did until this point wasn't sufficient, but he made an additional statement that I am basically not going to back out of this. Michlal, zibay hadarbe, matzi hadarbe. Makes it sound from this that he could have backed out with it. Had he not made this additional statement, he could have backed out of it. And that would imply that Mamad Shloshtam doesn't work, because he did Mamad Shloshtam, and he's saying that I have to say something more to stop it from being retracted. So Achi Kamar, Dvarim halalo lo nitnu lechazara. No, he's stating the facts. I can no longer take this back because I did it, Bapay. I did it in front of all of you three, and therefore it is a permanent gift that cannot be retracted. Hamarav Chadazimna. Isn't Rav the source for this concept of Mamad Shloshtam at the beginning of the sugya yesterday after the Mishnah? Rav Zvid, when he was quoting what he thought the Mishnah was speaking about, quotes, Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, that in the name of Rav Huna Amar Rav, that this is Mamad Shloshtam. Rav is the source for this Mamad Shloshtam. So Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Manali Biyadecha, Tznolio the Ploni, Mamad Shloshtam Kana. That if you have a creditor-debtor relationship, and the debtor and the creditor standing there, and there's a third party, creditor can say that I want you to pay this other party now, and that's it. It's done. Imi hahi, if I just had that statement of Rabbi Huna Marav, havamin ani mile matana meruba. That's only when you're talking about large gifts, or something of significance. Aval matana muetet lo libayi bifanav. So not that there's no institution by smaller gifts, but by smaller gifts, you won't require it to be in front of all of them. Kamash Malon, that you need the presence of all of them. You would think only by large gifts or large items, you would require all three of them to be present. When it's smaller things or smaller items, you would think, okay, you don't need all of them to be there. Two of them to be there would be sufficient. Kamash Malon, that Rav says that even by this small amount of saffron that is being given, you still have to have Mamad Shloshtam in order for it to work and to have the kinyan be effective without a kinyan, basically, which is Mamad Shloshtam works, even though you don't have any formal kinyan. The fact that it's being granted in the presence of all three parties gives it the strength of a kinyan, and it's effective to the point where you can't retract it, and the other party becomes the owner of whatever it is that we're speaking about. So what he's saying is that even though this is a smaller gift, not the size of a large manet, which is 100 zush, so when it's a manet, when it's a large amount of money, you need all three parties. But here, where it's a smaller, it has to be less than 100 zush, so that tells you that it really can't be a kav worth of saffron. that small amount, maybe you'd only need two of the bardis to be here. Maybe you wouldn't need Bappe that he's here. Kamash Malon, that's what Rav says. Since it's in front of him, I can't back out of it. But that means had he not been there, he could have backed out of it. It wouldn't have worked. You need Mamash Lashtam, even in smaller gifts. That's the Kamash Malon. Hanu Ginai, David Chushbana Badei Hododi. They were working out their bills between them. Pash Chamesh Istare Zuze. There was an extra amount of money between them. Gardeners over here, not gardeners in the sense like today where they come and fix up the garden. Gardeners here are vegetable growers. People who grew vegetables had vegetable gardens. So these gardeners had their vegetable gardens and they had some sort of co-op between them. And they're working out the summary at the end of the year and they figure out that one guy has excess money with him that he shouldn't have had. So he has Chamesh Istare Zuze. Istare Zuze, as Rashi points out, there are different types of sela. There's sela tsuri, which is what we call the sela d'oraita, and then there's sela medina, which was the sela that was the coin used at that time. The sela medina was valued at 1/8 of a sela tsuri. So a sela tsuri has made up of 4 dinar. So here, if you're talking about a sela medina, which is worth 1/8 of a sela tsuri, that means it's worth 0.5 dinar. And that's basically what you're saying here, that they had, istare zuze is a 0.5 dinar, so they had 5 of these 0.5 dinars. And the fact that it's called istare is telling you that these are the sela of the medina, not sela tsuri, to know what the value is. So now, they have pash, chamesh istare zuze gabe chad minayu. One of them had this extra amount. Amrule, yavinu nihale lemare ara, ba'ape mare aro. Bekona mine. Here they have these gardeners that are there. These are the gardeners that have the co-op between them, plus the gardener who has the extra money, which he really should be giving back to the other gardeners. So they say to him, in front of the owner of the land, give the owner of the land the money. So that would have been a sufficient period, because that's mamaj shloshtam. Here you have the creditors who are the other gardeners, the debtor who's the gardener who has too much money, and the maridara, the owner of the land, who's the new owner of the money. So they basically said, give it to him in front of him. But then, not only did he do that, v'konamine, he made a kinyan on it. He made a formal kinyan on it. So now he has, not only did he do it with Ma'ad Shloshtam, he actually did a formal kinyan with the Balakarka. Why he was giving the money to the Balakarka is not clear over here. It might be that they owed him money the way that the Tosfot Reed says over here, but Tasko. They were paying taxes on the land. They were actually paying the taxes for their land, and this was the tax collector of the land, the Mariara, meaning the government. Or it could be that they were sharecroppers, and that they had to pay their share to the owner of the land. That might be another possibility. The Sof Azal, Avad Chushbana Ben Dilei Denafshei. This gardener who found that excess money that he had, or through the Cheshbon, had seen that there was extra money, in the end he went back and double-checked the books, and realizes, Lo Pashka Vei Velo Midei. There was nothing left. He didn't have any excess money. The accounting had been wrong, and he didn't really owe the money to this individual. Ata the Kamei de Rav Nachman, he came before Rav Nachman, Amalei, what can I do for you now? First of all, you have Ramun Abrav, which is be Mamad Shloshtan. This was done by Mamad Shloshtan, so that's a Kinyan, even without a Kinyan. Vod Hakanu Minach. Also, he did a formal Kinyan. He took it from you. He had made a Kinyan on the money from you. So not only do you have Mamad Shloshtan, you also have a formal Kinyan. What do you want to do now? Take the money back? Rav Nachman assumes here that this gardener was just trying to back out of the giving him the money. It wasn't because he had a justification for doing it. He was simply saying, I don't want to do this in the end. So he says, you can't back out. That's the whole idea. Mamad Shloshtam, Kinyanim, are a smichot adat, that a person doesn't back out. Once you do that, it's a transaction that's irreversible. So you can't reverse the transaction now. So Amalei Rava pipes up and says exactly what you were saying, David. Altu hai, mikamar lo yahavina. He's not saying that I don't want to give it. Taleka gabai kamar. He's saying, I don't owe the money. Right, it's a very different claim. He's not saying, I don't want to pay anymore. I don't want to have to give it anymore. He's basically saying is, I don't owe him the money. I'm like, I'm paying kinyan b'ta'otu. Then the whole kinyan was done on a mistaken premise. V'chol kinyan b'ta'ot chozer. Even if a kinyan is done, you can have smicha d'adat if the underlying information is correct. But here, the underlying information was wrong. And so you can't have smicha d'adat premised on information that's just incorrect. It was done by mistake. And by mistake, will not make it into a formal kinyan. The whole thing falls apart. He says, okay, if that's the case, here you're not obligated to give the money because there wasn't money to give. Now, as far as the accounting that he does afterwards, Tosfot makes it clear that he can't just go back and say, you know what? I figured out that it wasn't right, the accounting. Why is he then believed any more than what happened in the original? Say, he can't say, yeah. Oh, you know what? I don't have any extra money left. That's not a fair claim, especially in the context of everything that's transpired. So he says, Perish Rabbeinu Chananel v'chein Rabbeinu Tam, sh'yu balei dinim modim, lo. That the other parties agreed over here, meaning that the other gardeners agreed that the cheshbon was wrong. Oh, haya davar yadua be'idut brura. Or they have a deem that can testify to that fact. Delo pashka be'midei. Umashma midivrehem. From there, it sounds like, d'minafshei ein ne'eman lomar ta'iti b'masha oditi. He can't say, I made a mistake when I admitted that I had the extra money. Afagav di'itlei migo. Here, Tosfot raises a very important issue here, is that he has a migo. D'yibay le'meymar chazarti uparati. He has a better lie if he wants to tell a lie, which is, I paid him already, it's done, the money's gone. The fact that he's going to come back and say, I don't owe the money because there was a mistake in the cheshbon, there should be a migo here, that if he was going to lie, he should have said, I paid it, and it's done. In fact, he doesn't lie that way and says that the cheshbon, the accounting comes out that I don't owe the money, so that should be enough of a reason to believe him. Because if he really wanted to lie, he has a much better lie, and that's a migo that gives him ne'amanut in this case. So that's what Tosafot says over here. It seems from this here, the way that the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rabbeinu Chananel are explaining it, that's only because he has strong evidence to the fact that the accounting was wrong. Either because he has a deem, or because he has the other parties agreeing to him that there was a mistake in the accounting. But he himself is not Naaman. Tosafot over here builds out of this a much larger position that you cannot use amigo in these types of cases. Once a person's already admitted to owing money, or he is obligating himself through that admission, you no longer have amigo to say parati, and then say, I really don't owe the money. From this you conclude, elamashma demigo lo mehemen lo mar shita'a. That from here you see that you cannot have amigo, that when you say you made a mistake in your admission, there's no amigo over there. Even though you could have said, I paid it back, and it would have been all over. The fact that you could have said, I paid it back, and you didn't, and you said, I made a mistake, there is no amigo, and Tosafot proves it from here and other places in Shas, that is the case. Even though in other instances we have migos where the person's believed, where he makes a claim and he had a better claim, and we say he's believed because why would he lie in this manner? Better if he's going to lie already, let him tell a good lie. So over here we do not apply that, and he doesn't get that right. Once he's admitted to it, he no longer holds a trump card to say, I made a mistake in my admission. He will not be believed, even though he could have just said, I paid it back, or I paid the guy already. So there he doesn't get a migo from here. Others, like the Ramban, believe that the only reason the Migo doesn't work here is because he made Kinyan. Not only did he add Mamad Shloshtam, but he also did the extra Kinyan. And that Kinyan is what's preventing the Migo from being exercised over here. Without that Kinyan, he could have exercised the Migo and said, I made a mistake in my admission, and he can retract the admission based on the Migo. And so for them, it's only this Kinyan that prevents it, but otherwise the Migo does exist for such a claim. Itmar, holech mane leploni shani chayav lo. Take this 100 zuz to so-and-so, who I am obligated to pay. This is a debtor. He owes money. So he sends it with an individual and says, take it to this other individual. Amar Rav, chayav b'achriyoto, b'balak zorinu chuzer. So Rav says that two things happen here. The first of which is, he can't back out of it. Once he's already given the money to the shliach to take to the creditor, he can't say to the shliach, give me my money back. There, it seemingly means that the shliach is acting on behalf of the creditor, and he's basically acquired the money for the benefit of the creditor, and that's why he can't back out of it. But if that's the case, then whose money is it at that point? Sounds like it's already the creditor's money. But Rav says, despite that fact, the achrayut, the responsibility for the money, is still on the debtor. If the money never reaches the creditor, the debtor is still on the hook for the money. So Rav says, the creditor gets the benefit of both sides. The shliach is appointed as an agent by the debtor, not by the creditor. The creditor has nothing to do with this agent. But if that's the case, then the creditor should get no benefit from the shliach, which is that then the debtor should be able to back out of the agency. Yeah. Rav is saying here that he cannot back out because the agent basically is an extension of the creditor and he acquires it on behalf of the creditor, which means that he is now deemed to be a shliach of the creditor. Despite that fact, he can't claim, okay, now it's your responsibility, creditor, because the creditor never appointed him as an agent. So he gets the benefit, the creditor gets the benefit of both worlds. He gets the benefit that the debtor can't back out of it. On the other hand, he gets the benefit that the debtor is responsible for the money till it reaches him. On the other hand, Shmuel Amar, mitoch shechayav b'achriyuto im balach zor chozer. Shmuel says you got to keep it on par. If he is responsible for the money, then the agent is his agent, and he can back out of it. As long as he's responsible for the money, it's his problem. He can rescind the agency anytime he wants. So that means that it's still the agent of the debtor. Shmuel is basically saying what you are arguing, which is be consistent. Either he is an agent of the creditor or he's an agent of the debtor. If he's an agent of the debtor should have all rights, which means he's responsible, but he also can back out of it. So Lema Bahaka Miflege. Well, let's understand, what's the machloket here between them? Damar Savar Holeich Kizchei Dami. That when you say to a party, take it to this person, it's the equivalent of saying, acquire it on their behalf. Umar Savar Holeich Lav Kizchei Dami. So that the argument here is, when you use the word Holeich, take it to them, what is the meaning of take it to them? So according to Rav, this is the way the Gemara is saying now, Rav thinks that when you say Holeich, it means acquire it on his behalf. Be zoche in it on his behalf. And therefore, that's why you can't back out of it. Because you gave the shliach the right to accept it on behalf of the creditor. That's why you can keep it. But according to Shmuel, when you say Holeich, you're not saying zoche, you're just saying take it. Act as my agent. Be my shliach to take it over there. But you're not saying acquire it on behalf of the creditor. So the read notes over here in the sheet of Shmuel, he says, V'kasha, afilu savar Shmuel, doleich lav kizchei domi, that even Shmuel holds that when you take it, it's lav kizchei domi, amai yachol achzorbo, why can he back out of it? Lo yuhei elahu ba'atzmo, tofes b'shvil malveh. There should be no difference than a tofes, the malveh, b'makom shalom chav d'acherim. Hai kaimelan, tofes the b'achov kana. Tshuva, the read says, the answer to that is, hamran le'el, gabi tofes the b'achov. Diamar mistafina, dilma minase b'urcha. If the receiving party says that I'm afraid that that stuff will get lost on the way, inami dilma shematata v'achaltalahu, or he thinks maybe he'll go and eat it or use it himself, tanate taino, that's a good taina, and therefore doesn't automatically become the party that's acting on behalf of the baal chov, of the creditor, because the creditor is afraid that this guy's not going to carry out what he's supposed to do. So if over here we say that he fully acquires it on his behalf, and now he takes on responsibility, then the Baal Chov's claim will not be a real claim. So basically what he's suggesting is that according to Shmuel, if the creditor wants the responsibility to remain with the debtor, then the individual is not a tofes the Baal Chov, b'makom shelo chav le'acherim. He's not functioning in that way. And therefore, he can't take full possession on behalf of the creditor. And since he is not taking possession of it, because he doesn't want to take responsibility, then the sender or the debtor over here can rescind the money that he gave, because he's still responsible. He's still the party that's in charge. And there's no zechei over here. So even though Shmuel holds holeich lav kizechei, you're not going to invoke the principle of a tofes, the bachov, makom shelo chav l'acherim kana, because the creditor over here has reasons not to allow this individual to act on his behalf, because he doesn't want the responsibility. And as Tosfon points out over here, even though Shmuel said explicitly that his reasoning is because of mitoch, nevertheless, v'ashto savur shoto tam shomer Shmuel mitoch shechayav v'achriyuto chuzer lo ikar tamhu. It's not the main reason that he gave, whether he's saying this in Rav, Shita, or whether the Gemara just thinks that that's an additional reason that he's giving, but that's not the main reason. The Gemara will, in the end, go back to saying that it is the main reason. But the Havamina was that that was not the main reason that he said it. Or that the Gemara believes in the beginning that when you say Oleich Kizchei, that overrides the Migo, and the Migo won't be functional in those conditions. In the end, the Gemara says no, that even if you say Oleich Kizchei, the Migo can still be functional, and that's what leads us into the next answer. Lo, the Gemara says that's not the argument. Tekuliyama Oleich Kizchei Dami. Everybody agrees here that the use of the language holeich is equivalent of saying to the shliach, acquired on behalf of the creditor. This is the machlok between Rav and Shmuel. Mar sabar lo amrinan migo, umar sabar amrinan migo. Shmuel says we say migo. Migo that you are chayav on the achrayut, since you are responsible for the money till it reaches the creditor, therefore you have a right to rescind the agency or to take the money back. Rav says, we don't say that, Migo. Just because you're responsible for the money doesn't give you the right to rescind the agency. Basically, the agent now gets bifurcated between the two parties. The agent acts to the benefit of the creditor in the fact that now he took the money and now the debtor can't take it back. On the other hand, he acts as the agent of the debtor to get the money to the creditor, and that's why the debtor is responsible. So the shliach is acting as an agent for both sides here, according to Rav. Shmuel says, no, that can't be the case. Either you're an agent for the debtor or you're an agent for the creditor. And since it's clear you're an agent for the debtor over here, then the debtor has a right to rescind the agency at any point. So Rashi says over here, when the Gemara concludes, the kulei ama holech kizchei dami, that is in general. V'mayube matana, on the other hand, if it's done as a gift, daleka achrayut, where there is no responsibility on the sending party, mode shmol deino chuzer. Shmuel agrees that you cannot retract it to that point, because Shmuel's whole shita revolves around migo. Since you're responsible for achrayut, therefore, you can retract it. But in a case where you have no achrayut, then you shouldn't be able to retract it. So based on that, Rashi says that a matana does not have this din of holeich kizchei dami, according to Shmuel. Tosafot disagrees here on the daf, as well as on daf Yud Gimel, and says that matana does have a din of holeich kizchei, according to Shmuel. But he says that nafkamina between them will be yishlamar kishpatro malveh min achrayut. The cases where it'll make a difference is a case where the creditor told the debtor that he is not responsible for the money when he sends it, or in a case where it's the sender is sending a document of emancipation to the slave, where there clearly he has no achrayut on the document because he's not responsible, he's not obligated to free the slave. In that case, modishmo deino chozer. Shmuel agrees that you can't rescind the gift at that point in time, because since he has no achrayut, there's no reason for the shliach then not to accept it on behalf of the recipient. And it's as if it went into the hands of the recipient immediately, and the gifter or the grantor cannot rescind that case. But according to Rashi and Tosafot, if he explicitly says to the shliach, zechei, that you should take possession on behalf of the recipient party, it would work. Whereas the Ramban disagrees and says that even if he explicitly says zechei, that it doesn't work in the case that there is achrayut. Because Shmuel says, by definition, achrayut makes it impossible to split the job of the shliach between the receiving party and the granting party. And since the granting party is responsible, it can't be that he's now acting on behalf of the receiving party. And even if he explicitly says zechei, it does not work. Tanya kovoti derav. We have a braita that supports Rav's position. Holeich mane leploni shani chayav lo. Take this 100 zuz to so-and-so that I am responsible to give it to him. Tain mane leploni, or give a mane to ploni shani chayav lo. Holeich mane leploni pikadon sheyesh lo biyadi. Take this pikadon that he left with me, send it to that party. Ten mane leploni pikadon sheyesh lo biyadi. Or he says to the agent, take back this 100 zuz that this person deposited with me, take it back and give it back to him. Chayav ba'achriyuto. He is responsible for the item until it reaches the destination party. The person who sent it is responsible for it. But if he wants to back out of it, once he's made the shliach to take it, he can't back out. Now this is more important, not by pikadon. By pikadon, the guy owns it. The person who owns it is the depositor. But it's more important in the case of a debtor. Once the debtor's given the money over to the shliach, he can't back out from the shliach having the money. Here, the bright that we bring is indifferent between holeich and tain, telling you that holeich has the same din as tain, which we said before, that kulei alma, holeich is kezechei dami. So now Gemara says, pikadon, by the pikadon, lemalei, ein ritzono she pikdano biyad acher. The recipient has a right to say, I don't want my pikadon to be with someone else. This is a sugya in Boba Metzia, a sugya what's called shomer shemaseh the shomer. A shomer, a guardian that gives over to another guardian. You deposit money with a certain person, or you give a article that you own to this person to keep for safekeeping. The person goes and gives it to someone else to watch on your behalf. What right does the shomer have to give it to the other party? He can say, "Ein mitzoni shiyeh pikdoni biyad acher. I don't want my pikadon in someone else's hands. I gave it to you because I trust you. First of all, I trust you to take care of it, but I also trust you if something happens that you'll take a shvuah to say that it was an ones, it was stolen, or something happened to it. I trust your shvuah. I trust you to give it back. I trust you to keep it properly. When you give it over to this third party, I have no relationship with that party. And therefore, shomer shemaseh the shomer is chayav." So that's what the Gemara says over here. Why isn't this pshia al yidei the nifkad? When he goes in and gives it to this other party to send it back, why is he allowed to do this? I mean, why is he just responsible for it? He should be a pushea at this time. If that's the case, that it's a problem, then why does the recipient, the one who put the pikadon, the depositor there, get the right to not have him retract it or pull it back? Because the party who's the recipient is not going to want it this way. He doesn't want it with this other shliach. He doesn't want it in the hands of this other party at all. He never gave permission for that. So he says, Amar Rav Zeira, kushuchusa kafran. It's a case where the holding party, or the person he deposited it with, has a reputation of being a person who denies things. And therefore, it's to the benefit of the depositor that it gets out of his hands. Because the longer it stays in his hands, the less chance he is going to get his deposit back. Because this guy has a bad reputation now. Suddenly, this reputation developed after he had already deposited the materials there. Or he's had now experiences with him where he's denied things, even though he had certainly deposited the money or given it to him. So therefore, the recipient, the depositor, sees value in the shliach having it. Even though normally he would say, I don't want my pikadon in someone else's hands, here it's to his benefit that the pikadon ends up in someone else's hands because now larger chance he'll get it back, a higher likelihood he'll get it back. Why is that important? That's important because the whole reason why you can't back out of giving something to a shliach is because we assume that the shliach was zuche on your behalf. We discussed the other day, the Tosafot says it's mishum shlichut, zichia mishum shlichut. Others, like the Ktzot HaChoshen, says it's zichia mishum yad. But either way, the way that zichia works is that you are working on behalf or on the benefit of the receiving party. So here, the mafkid, the depositor, why is it to his benefit that the shliach now picks up the pikadon and is going to bring it to him? It's actually to his detriment. He doesn't want his pikadon in someone else's hands. If this is to his detriment, you can't make a kinyan to his detriment. If that's the case, then the shomer, here the one who is the nifgad, should be able to retract and take it back because there was no kinyan on behalf of the mafkid, of the depositor. What the Gemara says is it's a case where there is a benefit that it ends up in the hands of the shliach because hukzak kafran. The actual person who's holding the object right now is a little suspect, and he is dangerous to leave it with him because you may not get it back. So now there is a benefit when it ends up in the hands of the shaliach, and that's why the shaliach acquires it on behalf of the depositor, and the nifgad, or the hukzak kafran here, can't retract what he's done, and the shaliach takes it and does not return it to that party. If he asks for it back, he doesn't have to give it back. He acquired it on behalf of the depositor. In a normal case, it would be to his detriment that it ends up with the shaliach because he doesn't trust the shaliach. And therefore it does not work. In normal cases, it'll be a chuvah, not a zchut. And therefore there's no kinyan on his behalf. But interesting, the Tosafot read over here says that even though the kaimelon aloha kishmuel bedine, we have a machloket rav and shmuel, bisurei, aloha is like rav. Bedine memononot, aloha is like shmuel. So here we have a machloket rav and shmuel, you would assume the aloha is like shmuel. Despite that fact, the Tosafot read says that the aloha is like rav over here because Tanya Kavate, that we have a braita that supports Rav. And so despite the fact that the normal rules would have dictated Aloha Kishmuel, over here, the Aloha is like Rav. Rav Sheshet Havale Asharta Desarvele Bemechuza. So Rav Sheshet had a credit account with these Sarvele, sounds like these cloaks, or some sort of clothing that these people sold in Mechuza. So Rav Sheshet would extend them credit to basically take the merchandise or the inventory and sell it. And they'd only have to pay him back after they sold it, seemingly some sort of consignment agreement over here, where the inventories that he gave out, he didn't force them to pay till later. So he was extending credit to these merchants in Mechuza. So I'm a leader of Yosef Barchamo, Bahadid Atit. Rav Yosef Barchamo lives in Mechuza. Rosheshit says to him, when you come, Aitinu Nihali, bring me the money that they owe me. I mean, these debtors or merchants owe him money. And he's saying, let them pay you on my behalf and you'll bring the money back to me. Also, he went, Yavinu Le, they gave it to him. They gave him the money to repay Rav Sheshet. Amri Le, nickname Minach, they said to him, we want you to make a kinyan on it. They said to the shliach, the Rav Yosef Barchamo, you make a kinyan on this so that it's yours and becomes your problem. Basically what they want to do is they want to get out of having to be responsible for the money at this point. Amri Lehu, in. He says, yes, okay, no problem. Lesof ishtamit lehu. He ran out of town before he made a kinyan with them. Ki'ata legabei. When he got to Rav Sheshet, amalei shapir avad. He did a good thing by running away. Delo shavit nafshich eved love leishmalve. Because by not making the kinyan, you prevented yourself from falling into the trap of being the love is a servant to the malve. Basically that the debtor has to deal with the creditor. And the debtor, in a sense, is both encumbered. He has the lower hand no matter what happens. So over here, if you make a kinyan, you're going to become the equivalent of the debtor over here. In that case, you're going to become the responsible party for the money. and it's to your detriment to make a kinyan. You're better off acting as a shliach here without taking responsibility versus taking responsibility for the money. Now, Rabbi Yosef Rechama is acting on behalf of Rav Sheshet. He goes to the debtors give him the money. If he doesn't make a kinyan here, the debtors are responsible for the money till it reaches Rav Sheshet. Right, you have to say here that Rav Sheshet did not appoint him as a shliach. I mean, you have to say that he's not an agent of Rav Sheshet, he just asked him a favor, can you bring me the money? Not acting as a shliach of Rav Sheshet. Right, correct. If he's an agent of Rav Sheshet, then as soon as he got the money, it would be in Rav Sheshet's hands. That's not the case, right? The case here is clearly where he just says, do me a favor and bring it, not that he officially made him into an agent. Now, Tosfot asks your question, but in a strange way. He says this, Mashma b'din lo ayu cholim lekofod achzir. They couldn't force him to give the money back. Afagav d'lo huksuku kafranim. Even though these merchants were not problematic merchants, and they did pay their money back in general. Hainu mishom demet haya shehu shlucho. Lo matzi amar ein ritzono shein piktano biyad acher. So therefore, what he did was he didn't make a kinyan. By not making a kinyan, it does not come into Rav Sheshet's hands, and therefore it remains the responsibility of the debtors when they're sending it. Or in essence, he becomes the shliach for the debtors at this point. But despite the fact that they remain the shlichim of the debtor, still in the granting of the item to the shliach, you can't make the claim, ein ritzoni shehi piktoni b'yad acher, because Rav Sheshet had approved of him. If that's the case, when the item goes into the possession of this shliach, he does acquire it on behalf of Rav Sheshet to the point that they cannot retract that which they gifted. So the shliach can act on behalf of Rav Sheshet to do this chia, but the responsibility can still remain with the debtors. So that's one way. Lishna achrina, shapir avad, eved loved liish malveh. It's a good thing you did this because they are the debtors. And since they are the debtors, they have the lower hand in all these transactions. And therefore, they should be responsible for the money until it reaches me, versus making you the responsible party for the money. So one way he said it about the shliach, he said it about Rav Yosef Bar Chama, you should not encumber yourself in this way. The other way he said it is, they are already encumbered, it's their responsibility, they shouldn't be released of that responsibility until the money reaches me. Rav Chai Bar Rabbi Yoshia Havale Ispako de Kaspa Ben Ardo. He had this vessel, silver vessel that was deposited in an Arda. Amar lehu, the Rabbi Dustai, the Rabbi Yanai, or the Rabbi Yossi bar Kiper, behadi datitu atyua niali. When you guys come back to see me from there in Arda, please bring it back with you. Azu yavu nihale. They went ahead and they gave the utensil to them. Amar lehu, nickname inaychum. They said to them, we want you to make a kinyan on it. Obviously, these individuals who were the nifkad, who were watching the item, didn't want to be responsible for it, so they wanted the shlichim to make a kinyan on it. Amar lehu lo. The shlichim, Rabbi Dustai and Rabbi Yossi Bar Kiper, refused to do that. They said, we don't want to do it. Amar lehu, adre nihalan. Then give it back to us. We don't want to send it with you because you're not taking responsibility for it. So Rabbi Dustai, Rabbi Yanai, Amar lehu in. He says, no problem, I'll return it to you. Rabbi Yossi Bar Kiper, Amar lehu lo. Rabbi Yossi Bar Kiper says, I'm not giving it back. Now Rabbi Yossi Bar Kiper is based on the lochot that we have learned, is saying that once I acquired it on behalf of the mafkid, and since we are shlichim of the mafkid, then it's a zchut for him, and I don't want to give it back to you, but I also don't want to take responsibility. Basically, the psak of Rav, that when you have a shliach in this case, he acts on behalf of the creditor to say that he doesn't have to give it back to the debtor over here, for the mafkid, that he doesn't have to give it back to the nifkad. But on the other hand, he doesn't take responsibility for the object. That's the problem of the nifkad. Havukam etzarulei. They were giving Rav Yossi Bar Kiper a hard time because he refused to give back the item to them. Amalei chazimar heche ka'avit. So Rabbi Yossi Bar Kiper says to his buddy, Rabbi Dustai, Rabbi Yanai, you see what they're doing to me? You see how much trouble they're giving to me? Meaning it seems like they were hitting him, whipping him, trying to force him to give back the object. I'm a little tav ramule. He says, yeah, they're doing good. Hit him more. He deserves to be hit. Kiatu legabe. So somehow they got out of town, out of Narda, and they returned back to Rabbi Achai by Rabbi Yoshia. And Rabbi Yossi Bar Kiper says to him, Amalei, Chazimar, lo mistai de lo sian. Not only did Rabbi Dustai, Rabbi Yanai not help me, Elam Arlohu Nami Tav Ramule. Not only that, he encouraged them to do it and said, you guys are doing a good job, keep hitting him. Amalei, Amai Tiavid Hochi. Mavachai, Rabbi Yoshia, says to him, why did you do that? Why didn't you support your friend, Rabbi Yossi Bar Kippur? Amalei, he says to him, Otam bnei Adam, hein ama, v'kovan ama. He says, they are an ama. Now, ama would make them very short. But as Rashi says over here, hein ama means that they were very tall individuals. That's what he was suggesting over here, that they were anshei midot, extremely tall people, but kovan ama, and they wore these very large hats, umedabrim michatziehen, and they speak in these halves. What Rashi says over here is that their voices were very low, kolan ava, they have these deep, deep voices, v'nir'eh adibur yotze mitiburan, and it makes it look like the sound is coming out of their belly, out of their stomach, rather than out of their throats, because it's so deep. Ushmotehem muvualim, and they have these strange names like Ardov, Arta, Upile Beresh, Omrim Kfotu, Koftim. If they say to whip, they whip you. Omrim Harogu, if they say to kill you, Horgim, they kill you. Ilu Hargu et Dostai, had they killed Dostai, he's talking about himself, had they killed Rab Dostai, Minatan Yanai, Abba Bar Kamoti, who would replace me with to my father, Yanai. So Rabbi Dostai, Rabbi Yanai saw his life at risk with these individuals. They were not easygoing individuals. They were strong men, a mafia of sorts. And he felt that his life was at risk. So in order to protect his life, when they were doing this to Rabbi Yossi Bar Kippur, he just said, yeah, yeah, you're doing the right thing. You're right. Because he didn't want to get himself into trouble. He didn't want to end up being killed by these individuals. So Amalei, Rabbi Chai, Bar Rabbi Yossi says to Rabbi Dostai, Rabbi Yanai, Bnei Adam, Alalu Krovim, Namachutein, are these individuals have governmental connections? Amalei Hein, he says, yes, they do. Yesh lahen susinu pradim shratzim achareyem, do they have horses and mules that run after them? Or, in other words, do they have servants that carry out their requests or their demands? Amalei Hein, he said, yes. Amalei Hein, Ihachi Shapir Avat, says, if that's the case, then you did the right thing because your life was at risk. These are not people who are going to be merciful or easygoing about anything. They will take retribution on anybody who does not agree with them or does not do what they ask them to do. And so for that reason, Rabbi Yossi Bar Kippur, even though halachically he didn't have an obligation to give back the item to them, was willing to give it back to them. Halachically, they had already acquired it on behalf of Rabbi Chai Bar Rabbi Oshia, and they shouldn't have to give it back. Nevertheless, because of the fear of his life, he was willing to give it back. In addition to that, when Rabbi Yossi Bar Kippur got into trouble with them, he didn't support him, and he said, oh, yeah, they're right, because again, he didn't want to risk his life and get into trouble with them. So he felt his life was in danger by standing on halacha, and therefore he was willing to bend in terms of halacha in order not to risk his life. Because one does not have an obligation to give up their life for mamon chavero, for the money or the possessions of his friend, even though it's a midat chasidut to try to protect it or take care of them, but you don't have to give up your life for your friend's money. And so over here, he says, you did right, or you acted appropriately, even though it wasn't necessarily halachically right. Rabbi Yossi Bar Kippur held the halacha to the letter of the law. But by doing so, he did get himself into trouble. He got himself beaten up, and aside from that, he could have got himself killed, and maybe it wasn't the right decision that Rabbi Yossi Bar Kippur made. All right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Holech maneh leploni, valach ubakshu velo matzou. So an individual sends money to a receiving party. Valach, they go, ubiksho, and they look for this individual. Velo matzo, and they don't find him. So now we have two brayta. One brayta says, Tani chado yachzeru lemishaleach. You bring the money back to this sending party. Vitaniidach liyoshe mishit nishtalchu lo. Then you give it to the inheritors of the recipient. Lema bahaka miflege. Let us say that the machloket here between the brayta is this. The marzava holeich kizchei dami. Marzava holeich lav kizchei dami. And when you say oleich, are you indicating that you want the shaliach to accept it or acquire it on behalf of the receiving party? One brayta says oleich is kizchei, and therefore the recipient already acquired it. And when you get there, if he's not there, you give it to his yorshim. On the other hand, the first brayta thinks that it's not kizchi. Therefore, when you said holeich, it means literally take it there. If you find it, give it to him. If not, it remains under the ownership of the gifter or the grantor. So, Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, the kuli ama holeich lav kizchi domi. No, that's not the explanation of the machloket. Rather, everybody believes that holeich is not like an acquisition. It's the opposite of the conclusion we made before by Rab and Shmuel, because over there we said that kuli ama holech tizchi dami, that taking it is the equivalent of acquiring it. Over here, the Gemara says, no, everybody agrees that when you say holech, it's not acquiring it. Below kasho, there's no stira between the brightot. Hai bebori, hai beshchid meira. It's the difference between whether the person or the gifter or the grantor here was healthy, or he was a shchid meira, or he was on his deathbed giving his last will and testament. So therefore, we would assume the bari who's gifting, his holech doesn't have the power of zchi because he's a normal person. And we just said before that when you use the word holech, it doesn't mean that the shliach should take it on behalf of the other party. On the other hand, by a shchiv meira, where there are no need for kinyanim, because his milim kimisurim dami, that when he says something, it's the equivalent of it being granted over and a kinyan being formally affected, just by the mere fact that he states it, that's enough of a kinyan. Then the receiving party accepted already or acquired it. If that's the case, then when you get there, if you don't find him, then it's your shemar, the next entitled parties to it. And that would be the difference between them. The braita that says give it back to the sender is talking about a healthy gifter. And the one that says give it to the yorshim of the recipient is talking about a case where the gifter was a shchiv meira, someone teetering on the edge of death. Rav Zvid amar, hava hava shchiv meira. Rav Zvid says, no, both cases are a case where it's being granted or gifted by a shchiv meira, someone on their deathbed. Had eaten the mekabel b'shat matan ma'ot. Had letten the mekabel b'shat matan ma'ot. Question is the receiving party alive at the time that the gift was granted? So now, a shchiv meira does grant through his statements a full kinyan to the receiving party. But that assumes that there is a receiving party there. So as long as the recipient was alive when the shchiv meira granted the gift, then in his essence he acquired it at that moment that he said it and gave over that he wants this property to end up in the hands of this recipient. It's as if a kinyan took place. But that assumes that there is a recipient party. So if there's a recipient party, he acquired it. If he dies subsequent to that, his yorshim become the inheritors of that. And that's the bright that it says it goes to the yorshim. On the other hand, if the recipient's not alive at the time that the shchiv meira is granting it, there's no receiving party for the kinyan. The kinyan is solely a unidirectional kinyan now, which is that he's giving it over through his words, but there's no recipient. If that's the case, it was as if there was no gift, and you should return it to the original sender. Whether that's because the Mikabel and not being in the world is basically you've generated a kinyan bitaot, meaning that you're trying to give over something to a party that doesn't exist, and therefore the kinyan fails, and that's why it comes back. Or, as the Reed says, is because the person who's gifting it had in mind for it to go to this particular individual, and that particular individual wasn't in the world, so it's a zechia bitaot. So it's because of the dat mishaleach that causes the problem, whereas others say it's just objectively a problem because there is no receiving party to the kinyan. So Tosfot holds over here by shchiv meira Omer Reed the afgav to make mikabel b'chayei notein, that even though the recipient died and while the grantor was still alive, v'lo kani yelo achar mitat notein, and the matnat shchiv meira only goes into effect when he passes away, afilo achi kanu yorshim. Nevertheless, the inheritors of the recipient inherited the dat notein hu, because the mindset of the grantor is kevin shiyesh don mikabel b'shat matan ma'ot. Since the recipient was alive at the time that he said that he's going to give it, shiiskia makabel achar mitato, that the recipient get it after his death, ohu o yorshav, either him or his inheritors, because at the time that he granted it, he was alive. Vafilo lo noldu yorshim mikabel ad achar mitat notein kanu. And even if the yorshim of this individual is the recipient, were only born after the death of the grantor, we still give it to them, because that was the intent of the grantor. The intent of the grantor was that immediately the recipient takes possession of it, even though it only goes into effect when he dies. The question about that really comes up about whether he can then rescind the gift. Some Rishonim who believe that he has the right, just like he has the right to grant it, he has the right to rescind it until the moment of his death, which means that even though it goes effective now, that's retroactively after his death, it goes into effect immediately from the time that he said it. But if he changes his mind in between, he can change the kinyan until that moment of death. Others say that the only way he can change his mind is if he gets healthy. And therefore, all of the gifts of the shchiv meira are rescinded at that point. That's the only way he can come back, but he cannot, through his words, take it back, because basically the gift is granted at this moment, and it's effective immediately. We only carry it out at his death, but otherwise it's effective immediately, and he cannot reverse the kinyan that he made. But Papa Amar, ha, v'ha, b'bari. Rav Papa disagrees with Rav Zvid. Similar, we had a machloket on our Mishnah between Rav Zvid and Rav Papa of how to explain the Mishnah. So to over here, in order to explain and reconcile these brightot, we have a machloket Rav Zvid and Rav Papa. Rav Papa Amar, ha v'ha b'bari. Both of them are cases of a bari, a healthy individual grifting. Ha demit mikabel b'chayin notain. Ha demit notain b'chayin mikabel. Depends who predeceased the other. In a case where the demit mikabel, the recipient died before the grantor of the gift, then you give it back to the sender because there was never a kinyan over here. And holeich is not kezechi dami. And since there's no acquisition on behalf of the recipient party, if you find that the recipient isn't there, you bring it back to the sender. On the other hand, ha demit notain b'chaye mikabel, in the case where the gifter or the grantor of the gift dies or predeceases the recipient, over there, even though by the time they get there, the mikabel is also passed away, nevertheless, you give it to the yorshim of the mikabel because of something that's called mitzvah lekayim divrei hamet. There is a mitzvah to uphold or do that which someone has died, has instructed you. So even though with a normal, healthy individual, if he instructs you to do something, there is no kinyan over here. And since there's no formal kinyan, and holeich is not kezechi dami, therefore, if you don't find the mikabel, you bring it back to the grantor. But in the case where the grantor passed away before the mikabel passed away, then there's a separate mitzvah, which is we want you to do what the mate said. We want you as much as possible to carry out the words of the mate, which is a concept called mitzvah de kayim divrei amit. That is a mitzvah to carry out the words or the intent of what the mate wanted. And so over here, where the sender predeceases the recipient, the mitzvah to carry out his words would be to bring it to the mikabel. And in essence, the mikabel then acquired it, now that he passed away. Since he had already acquired it by the mere fact that it's mitzvah lekayim divrei amet, that acquisition then gives it to his yorshim, and you should grant it to the yorshim, and that's the difference in the brightot. Tosafot, back on the Mishnah, on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, also makes one other qualification about this din of mitzvah lekayim divrei amet. He says, "Vod mefarish Rabbeinu Tam, d'lo amrinim mitzvah lekayim divrei amet, ela b'davar shehu shlash mitchila lekach biad shlish." It's only this concept of mitzvah lekayim divrei amet when he already granted the item over to a third party to act on his behalf. If he simply said, "You know, I'd like to give a gift to so and so," and then he passes away, we don't say over there mitzvah lekayim divrei amet, because it was never given over. The gift never went into action, or there was never any action taken by this individual prior to their passing away. If that's the case, we will not act to the Kayim Divrei Amet, because that's all that remains is Divrei Amet. On the other hand, if he already took some sort of action that indicates that he wanted this to happen, which is he gives it over to a third party, then we will invoke the principle of mitzvah the Kayim Divrei Amet, and we'll try as much as possible to accomplish that which the mate said. The Rabbeinu Tam also on the Mishnah notes that this idea or concept of mitzvah lekayim divrei amet only applies to someone who is within the world of Yerusha. Because since he still has some quote-unquote residual ownership in the money of the estate, because through him the Yorshim come and collect, so he in a sense has some residual ownership in there, then we say mitzvah lekayim divrei amet because that residual ownership gives us the impetus or the right to go and do what he wanted, because he really still has some ownership in there. And what the Rabbeinu Tam says is that it's not true by a ger. A ger who has no real yorshim, since he has no real yorshim, and there's no real yerusha for the ger, therefore there would be no din of mitzvah lekayim divrei amet by a ger, because he loses all control over his property at the time that he passes away. Because he's a kinok chenola dummy. Now obviously, if after he converted, he has children, and he has real yorshim, then that would not be the case. But if he converted and then passed away without having any children while being a Jew, then he's kinyok shenola dami, and he has no true yorshim, he has no residual control over his property, and therefore there'd be no mitzvah lekayim divrei amet. So those are two qualifications that Rabbeinu Tam makes about this concept of mitzvah lekayim divrei amet. So Gemara says, Leima holeich kizchi tanayehi. Let us say this concept of whether holeich means that you're telling the party to acquire it on behalf of the recipient or not. That is a machloket tanaim. Titania, holeich mane leploni, valach o biksho, velo mitzao, says take this 100 zuz to so-and-so. He went and inquired as to whether he was there, velo mitzao, and he didn't find him. Yachzeru le mishaleach, you return them to the sender. Mate Mishaleach, if the sender had already died by the time the Shliach gets back, from Natan v'Rabbi Yaakov Amru Yachzerul Yosheha Mishaleach. They go back to the inheritors of the sender of the gift or the grantor of the gift. The Yeshomrim, the Yoshei Mishin Nishtachulo. You give it to the inheritors of the recipient. That's the way to deal with it. Yehuda Nasio Amar Mishum Rabbi Yaakov Shamruar Mishum Rabbi Meir. Mitzvah the Kayim Dibrei Amet. It's a mitzvah to carry out the instructions of the mate, which seemingly would imply that you should give it to the Yoshei Ha Mikabel. The Chamim say we have a lot of sfeikot over here. We have two levels of sfeik, which is whether holeich is kizchi or holeich is not kizchi. So whether the wording of using holeich automatically grants the shliach the right to acquire it on behalf of the recipient because it's the equivalent of saying zchi, take possession of it on behalf of the other party. So that's one sfeik. And they have a separate sfeik, which is whether there's mitzvah the kayim divrei amet, or there's no mitzvah the kayim divrei amet. Given all those fekot, they say yachloku. V'kan amru, and over here they say, it's not clear where kan amru is, but likely it means in Bavel, they say, kol mashi yirtzeh shliach yaseh. That whatever the shliach wants to do, he should do. One more tano in this braita, Amar Rabbi Shimon Anasi, ayadi haya maseh. I had an incident like this. And they said they should return it back to the inheritors of the sender, which is similar to the position of Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yaakov. My love, Bahaka Miflage. Let us suggest here that the machloke between all these different Tanaim and this Braita is along these lines. The Tanakama Sabar, the Tanakama believes, Holeich Lav Kizchi. That when you say take it over to him, it's not as if you required it on his behalf. And therefore the Tanakama who says over here, Holeich manaya leploni valach ubiksho v'lo mitzao yachzeru l'meshaleach. The person appointed a shliach to go and give this money to so-and-so, and he said, holeich, there is no zchia, and therefore the recipient party didn't get it until it reaches him. When they got there and he's not there, there is no recipient, and therefore it returns to the sender. Again, we're talking about a case where he is a bari, and since he is a bari, there was no shchiv meira concept that he gives over the property right away to the receiving party, and you need a kinyan. And here the kinyan is lacking because holeich does not say the equivalent of zchi, that the shliach should take it on behalf of the receiving party, and there was no receiving party, so it comes back to the sender. Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Yaakov, Nami, holeich lav kizchi. They hold like the Tanakama. Now the Tanakama only dealt with a case where the recipient was not alive. He does not deal with the case where the sender passed away. That's the next stage of the Braita, where if the sender passed away, by the time the Shliach got back, the sender had passed away, then what do you do? So Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Natan said, Holeich lav kizchi, therefore the receiving party never took acquisition of it. V'afagav demit, and even though the sender died, lo amrina mitzvah lekayim divrei amet. We do not say that there's a mitzvah to do what the mate wanted. And therefore, according to Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yaakov, it returns to the Yosheha Mishaleach. It goes back to the inheritors of the sender. It never left the sender's possession. Not because of holeich. Holeich is not kizchi dami. And so therefore, the shliach does not acquire it immediately upon taking it to the recipient. The recipient wasn't there, so he can't acquire it. And even though the Mishaleach, the sender, passed away, there's no din or there's no concept of mitzvah lekayim divrei hamet. And so therefore, that's not another reason not to say that there's a kinyan here. Therefore, return it to the Mishaleach. Mishaleach's not alive. Give it to his Yorshim. The Yeshomrim will say that it goes to the inheritors of the recipient. They believe Holeich Kizchi. That when you send something in this manner, when you say, take this on my behalf, you also say to the Shliach, acquire it on behalf of the recipient. And therefore, it becomes the recipient's property immediately. And when they go there, they don't find the recipient. Then they give it to the Yorshei of the recipient, the inheritors of the recipient, because the recipient already owns the item. You're not going to take it back to the grantor of the gift because the grantor of the gift no longer has possession of it. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi Amar Mishum Rabbi Yaakov, Shamar Mishum Rabbi Meir, Holeich Lav Kizchi. He holds like the Tanakama, Rabbi Yaakov, and Rabbi Natan, that when you say Holeich, it's not as if there's an acquisition. Mihu, Heicha Demit, but when the Mishaleach dies, Amrinin Mitzvah Lekayim Divrei Amet. So, in terms of upfront, when he says holeich, it's not as if they made an acquisition on behalf of the recipient. Therefore, the recipient has no rights to the property. And if they go there and don't find the recipient, they don't give it to his Yorshim, they bring it back to the Mishaleach. But in the interim, if the Mishaleach, the sender, passed away, then, like we said here, it's in the hands of a third party, and we know that his intent was to get the gift to the recipient, then it's mitzvah the Kayim Divrei Emet, and that mitzvah the Kayim Divrei Emet gives the recipient extra power that he is entitled or should receive the property. And in receiving the property, he then passes that right down to his Yorshim. The reasoning is not Holech Kizchidami, but the reasoning is Mitzvah Lekayim Divrei Emet. So even though they have the same halachic outcome as the Yesh Omrim, Rabbi Yehuda Hanassi, it's not premised on the same reasoning. The Yesh Omrim are based on Holech Kizchi, whereas Rabbi Yehuda Hanassi is basing it on Mitzvah Lekayim Divrei Emet. And therefore the Yesh Omrim would say this, even if the notain, even if the grantor did not pass away, they still would say that the recipient's Yorshim should get it, because their whole reasoning is Holech Kizchi, that the acquisition on behalf of the receiving party happened immediately, and therefore the Mishaleach is disengaged from this completely. He has no rights to it anymore. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yehuda Hanassi, it'll only be true if the sender passed away, because then there's mitzvah lekayim divrei emet. If the sender is still alive and the recipient's not there, it will come back to the sender because he believes Holech Lav Kizchi Dami, that when you send it, it doesn't mean that the shliach should acquire it on behalf of the receiving party. The Chamim say divide it up. They have doubts here, as we mentioned before. There is a double safek over here. There's a safek as to whether Holech Kizchi or Holech is Lav Kizchi Dami. And even if you say that it is or isn't, is there a mitzvah the Kayim Divrei Amet? Is there a separate mitzvah to Kayim Divrei Amet? Since there are multiple sfeikot, the Chamim say Yachloko, the best thing is to split it up. Now, Tosfa brings an interesting idea here. He says, "Kol teiku b'shevashas." Anytime that the Gemara says teiku, mefarish b'sha'arim derabenu hai dechokim. In the sha'arim derabenu hai, where he lists out all the principles of what you should do in certain situations, over there he says, whenever you have a teiku in the Gemara, chokim, you split the money. Ve'ein nira deri. The Ri says, I don't understand what Rav Hai is saying. Hecha da'ashkhan beheji achloku. We see here that the Chachamim say Yachloku. Yachloku means to split. Teiku does not mean to split. Teiku is basically a safek. And when you have a safek, you leave the safek in the chazoka or the place that it is right now. And a motzi mechavero l'avaraya. So that's a kind of a safek. In the case where they say Yachloku. So here the Chachamim say there's a safek and Yachloku. So Rabbeinu Hai extrapolates from that and says, anytime you have a safek, yachloku. And teiku, since it's a safek, it's yachloku. The Ri says, no. Only when they explicitly state yachloku is that the case. But in case they don't say yachloku, a safek remains under the normal principles, which are that the chazoka stays with the person who possesses it, and anybody who wants to change that status has the burden of proof on them, because it is a safek. Kanamu bevel shuda adif. That the Shuda the Daine, which is a concept that is explained here also in the first parak in Baba Metzia, that Shuda the Daine Adif, it's better off the decision of the Dayan. Now, way Rashi explains it here, as well as in Baba Metzia, is it is up to the Shaliach, or it's up to the Dayan, to make the best assessment of the situation and say, what did he really intend? Given all the facts here, all the information that I have, make the best decision based on those facts. Tosfot over here, as well as Tosfot in Baba Metzia, disagrees with Rashi and says that's incorrect. It's not about making the determination based on the facts, but rather simply up to the decision of the Shliach of the Dayan. They can do as they please. Whatever they want, they can make a decision. Why is that a better answer than the Yachloku of the Chachamim when you have a Safek? Because, as is pointed out in the first parak in Sanhedrin, there you have a Machloket as to whether Pshara or Din is better. Is compromising better, or is Din adjudicating the case to its fullest extent better? And over there, the one who says that Din is better, it says because by Pshara, you know that nobody is getting the right answer. When you do a compromise, then for sure, everything is wrong. Nobody got the right answer. In the case where you give all the money to one party, there's at least a 50-50 chance that you got it right. And that's what Shuda Dedaini says. If you're Yachloko, you for sure got it wrong. Because no party ended up what they're supposed to end up with. Either all the money or none of the money. But here they ended up with a half of it. So that's why Shuda Dedaini says give it to one party. Rashi says through making a certain amount of reasonable assumptions about what you think the best outcome should be over here. And based on that, grant it to one of the parties. On the other hand, Tosfot says, just give it to one of the parties. Whatever you feel like, you give it to one of the parties, you make the decision, it's up to you. But at least there's a 50-50 chance that the right party ended up with the money, and that's a better outcome. Rabbi Shimon HaNasi, Maseh Atal Eshminan. And Rabbi Shimon HaNasi just brings down a case law that agrees with Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yaakov, seemingly. And he's not adding anything in terms of the understanding of the case. But based on that, you know, you have a machloket of Tanaim here about whether Holek is Chidami or not. The Gemara says, lo. No, that's not the explanation of the Braita. But Bari, the Kuliyama, lo plige. When talking about a healthy individual, nobody argues that Holek is Lav Kischidami. That when you say Holek, it's not the equivalent of saying acquire it on behalf of the receiving party. The case over here is a case where it's a person on the teetering on the edge of death, and he's on his deathbed giving his last will and testament. Uplukta de Rabbi Elazar v'Rabbanan kamiflege. And they're arguing within the machloket of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbanan about how the gifts of Shechid Meirah work. Detanan, amichalek nechasav al piv. One who is distributing his property based on his statement. Rabbi Elazar omer, echad bari v'echad misukan, nechasim sheyesh lehem achrayut, niknim b'kesef b'shtar b'chazaka. So what Rabbi Elazar says is there's no difference between a healthy person distributing his estate and a person teetering on death, person on their deathbed distributing their estate. And in the cases, if you want to distribute, you have to have proper kinyanim. When it comes to real property, the only way to acquire real property are through one of the three kinyanim that apply to real property. And that is kesef, through money, shtar, through a documentation, or b'chazakah, exerting control over the item. So unless you have one of those three kinyanim, the gift is not considered to be a gift. If the person passes away, then we won't grant it. Same thing with non-real property. The only way to acquire it is through kinyan mishicha, is through actually taking it, pulling it, whether it's kinyan hagbah, there are other types of kinyanim, similar to mishicha, but those kinyanim are the only way to acquire the property or to finalize the gifts. That's both by a healthy person and by someone who's on their deathbed. On the other hand, chamim armim, elu ve'elu niknim be'amira. Both of them are acquired through speaking. Now, elu ve'elu over here means both nechasim she'en lehem achrayut and nechasim she'esh lehem achrayut, both real property and non-real property. The chamim believe that a shechid meirah has the din of kemisurim domi. That the chachamim believe, in order to ease the mind of the person who's on his deathbed and to know that his instructions are going to be carried out, we don't delay the gifting by demanding that there be proper kinyanim done, but rather we say whatever he says is as if it's done. Amru lo, so the chachamim said to Rabbi Elazar, Maseh b'iman shel b'nei Ruchel, there was an incident with the mother of b'nei Ruchel, shaita chula, she was sick, v'amra, tinatein kvinati lebiti, I want you to give over my Rashi over here is nushka, which is some sort of brooch or necklace or bracelet, over to my daughter. V'hi b'shnei masar maneh. And it was worth 12 maneh or 1,200 zuz. So it was an extremely expensive item. It was a lot of money. And she said to give it to him. Umeita. And she passed away. V'kaimu chachamim et divareha. And the chachamim carried out her instructions without any kinyan, without any formal kinyan. The children, the boys, should have been the inheritors of the estate. Yet, because she gave us this instruction prior to her death to give this item to her daughter, they carried that out as if she was a shechid meirah, and therefore there was a kinyan, despite the fact that there was no formal kinyan. So, Amar lehem, Rabbi Elazar says, back to the chachamim, b'nei Ruchel tikbareim imam. B'nei Ruchel, their mother, should bury them. Basically, it's a curse on them. Rabbi Elazar had some altercations or difficulty with the b'nei Ruchel because he believes that kotsim, briars, or thorns that grow inside of a kerem in a vineyard are kilayim, or kilay b'kerem. And the B'nai Ruchel used to let these items grow in their vineyards, and they ignored the shita of Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar thought they were not good people. And he says, you can't bring proof from any incident that involves their family because these aren't people that keep the halacha, or these aren't upstanding citizens. And he says, don't bring me a proof from that. So now the Gemara goes to explain how that explains our braita now. Tana Kama ki Rabbi Elazar. Tana Kama holds like Rabbi Elazar that in order to have a Shechid Meirah's instructions be carried out, you need a full-fledged kinyan. And since there was no kinyan over here, if they don't find the receiving party, they bring it back to the sender. Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Yaakov, Nami ki Rabbi Elazar. They also hold like Rabbi Elazar that if you go there and you don't find the receiving party, you can bring it back. But here, the Mishalech, the sender, also passed away. V'afagav the meat, even though the sender died, lo amrina mitzvah lekayim divrei emet. They do not subscribe to this position that there's a mitzvah to carry out or to do whatever the mate asked. The ishomrim kirabanan. The ishomrim hold like the rabbanan, that is shchiv meira, who gives instructions. You follow those instructions even though there was no formal kinyan. And therefore over here, when the mishaleach sent it as a shchiv meira, he intended to go to the recipient. And that means the recipient got it right away. So now if the recipient passed away after that point, but before the shliach got there, then it belongs to the recipient, it will go to his yorshim. The mishaleach, he has no rights in it anymore. They already granted it as a shchiv meira. He gave over full rights to the recipient party. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, shamar mishum Rabbi Meir, ki Rabbi Elazar. He agrees with Rabbi Elazar that you need formal kinyanim in order for the shchiv meira's instructions to go through. Miu heicha demit. But in a case where the mishaleach dies, amrina mitzvah lekayim divrei amet. There is a mitzvah to carry out the words of the mate. Again, the same nafkaminot that we saw before, which is, they both agree that when the mishaleach dies, it ends up going to the inheritors of the recipient, but for different reasons. The ishomim say that's because the recipient acquired it immediately. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi says it's because the mishaleach's death causes there to be a necessity to the kayem divrei amet, which means if the mishaleach is still alive, according to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, you would return it to the mishaleach, because the only reason to grant it to the recipient's inheritors is because mitzvah kayem divrei amet. Over here, the grantor is not dead. On the other hand, for the yeshomrim, once the shchiv meira gives it over, it's done. The recipient got it already. So it doesn't matter that the shchiv meira is still alive right now, unless they retract the whole gift. The gift is as if done, and therefore it goes to the recipient. If the recipient's not there, it goes to the recipient's yorshim. The chachamim omrim yachloku. The chachamim say you divide it up, you split it between the yorshei mishaleach and the yorshei mikabel, because misapkaluhu, they have a safek, like before, we have this dual safek. Is halacha like Rabbi Elazar, the halacha like the chachamim? Is halacha that the words of the shchiv meira are kimisurim dami, and you don't have to do any formal kinyan, or do you need a formal kinyan? In either way, one of those two is true. What do you do with the mitzvah lekayim divrei amet? Is there a din of mitzvah lekayim divrei amet or not? Since there are multiple sfeikot, they say yachloku, v'kama amru shuda odif. And here in Bavel, they say shuda odif, which is, according to Rashi, the shliach tries to make the best assessment of the situation, or according to Tosfot, the shliach does as he pleases, but he gives it to one of the two, either the yorshim of the mishaleach, or the shim of the mikabel. Rabbi Shimon HaNasi maseh ata li ashmi inan. Rabbi Shimon HaNasi just comes to tell us case law that corroborates the view that it goes back to the inheritors of the mishaleach, similar to the position of Rabbi Natan and Rabbi Yaakov. So Yibailu, the Gemara asks about this Rabbi Shimon HaNasi. Nasi who? O mishmei de Nasi tamar. Is it Rabbi Shimon is the Nasi? Or is it Rabbi Shimon HaNasi, meaning that in the name of the Nasi? The reason, seemingly, that the Gemara is asking this is, as Tosfot says, "V'fishalom atzinu shaya nasi." We don't find anybody called Rabbi Shimon a nasi. We find Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. We find Rabbi Shimon, who is a nasi, but he's always mentioned with his father's name. We don't find someone called Rabbi Shimon a nasi. Period. And so, therefore, we're questioning whether there really was a Rabbi Shimon a nasi, or did the Tana make a small mistake and instead of saying Rabbi Shimon meha nasi, said Rabbi Shimon ha nasi. And that's what the Gemara is trying to clarify. Tashma, Damar Rav Yosef, Halacha ki Rabbi Shimon HaNasi. Rav Yosef says Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon HaNasi. So from here you would think that even though the Tana might have made that mistake, Rav Yosef, when he's coming to say the Halacha, would have known that there was no Rabbi Shimon HaNasi, and he would have corrected for that. The fact that he doesn't correct for it and says Rabbi Shimon HaNasi makes it sound like he believes that Rabbi Shimon is the Nasi. So the Tana should have said, Amar Rabbi Shimon HaNasi, or Amar Rabbi Shimon HaNasi Omer. And one of those two would have given us the indication. They left out the word Omer. Maybe that was a mistake. But now that Rabbi Yosef, who knows the issue, still said Rabbi Shimon HaNasi, seems to be that it's indicative of the fact that he believes Rabbi Shimon was a Nasi. Gemara says, V'adayin tibay lucha, Nasi hu? Odu kamar mishmei de Nasi. So the Gemara says, maybe not. Maybe Rabbi Yosef is just mimicking the Lashon of the Braita and saying the halacha is ki Rabbi Shimon HaNasi, not because that's the right way to say it, but because he wants to say the halacha is like the way that the Tana says Rabbi Shimon HaNasi. And so he's not opining on whether it's Rabbi Shimon HaNasi or Rabbi Shimon Ishem HaNasi, but simply saying that whatever is quoted in the Braita in this way, the halacha is like that. So he's simply just using the wording of the Braita, not giving any information about this information. Therefore, Teiku, it's unresolved as to whether there really was a Rabbi Shimon Anasi, or is Rabbi Shimon in the name of the Nasi. Gufa, Amar Rav Yosef, Alocha, Rabbi Shimon Anasi. So now we just saw this, the Gemara wants to delve into this matter a little more, that Rabbi Yosef says Alocha is like Rabbi Shimon Anasi. Va'kaimelon divrei shchiv meira, kiktuvim umisurim domi. Don't we paskin like the Chachamim, that a shchiv meira who gives his last will while he's sitting on his deathbed, that it's considered as if gifted, done, in order to quiet the mind of the Shchiv Meira, so that he shouldn't be mituraf, worrying about getting the Kinyanim, getting it written down. If we tell him that whatever he says will be carried out, he'll be in much more at ease. And for that reason, the Chachamim granted that power to a Shchiv Meira to grant Kinyanim just through verbal instructions. So if that's the case, how can you say the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon HaNasi, when Rabbi Shimon HaNasi says that the Halacha is it goes back to the sender? Goes back to the sender, that means that even by a Shchiv Meira, we send it back to the sender. Rav Yosef Mukila Bebari. Rav Yosef says the Braita is not talking about a Shchiv Meira, the second way we explain the Braita, but rather, like the first way we explain the Braita, it's talking about a healthy individual gifting. Gemara says, V'hada Yorshe Mishaleach Kamar. Don't you say over here that you give it back to the inheritors of the Mishaleach? V'kaimelon, don't we also paskin mitzvah the Kayim Divrei Amet? That there's a mitzvah to carry out the words of the mate. And since that's the case, you should have to give it to the Yorshe HaMikabel, because the Mishaleach died. The Mishaleach died. Based on the Lachot that we know, number one, that Divrei Shchiv Meira K'Misurim Domi, so you have to die at a Bari. And if he's a Bari and he passed away, we also pass in that Mitzvah the Kayim Divrei Amet. So either way, it should end up with the Yorshe HaMikabel. So Gemara said, okay, we're dying at a Bari, but you still have this problem, Mitzvah the Kayim Divrei Amet. Today, Yachzeru the Mishaleach. Rabbi Yosef's Braita has a slightly different version of the Braita, which is, it says, Yachzeru l'mishaleach. It should go back to the original gifter. Not the Yorshe HaMishaleach, but rather to the Mishaleach. In Rabbi Shimon HaNasi's statement, it said they returned it to the sender, not that they returned it to the Yorshe HaMishaleach. So, based on the Girsa that we have, Rabbi Shimon HaNasi's statement upholds the position of Rabbi Nathan and Rabbi Yaakov. On the other hand, according to the amended version of the Braita, Rabbi Shimon HaNasi's case law is supporter of the Tanakama, who says that it goes back to the Mishaleach. So in that case, there's no Divrei Shchiv Meira K'Miktuvim Misurim Dami, because it wasn't a Shchiv Meira. The case is about a Bari. If it's a Bari, then there's a Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Amet. The Mishaleach didn't die. The Mishaleach was still alive. And therefore, it goes back to the Mishaleach. And then Rabbi Shimon is supporting the position of the Tanakama. And Rabbi Yosef says, Halacha K'Rabbi Shimon, it means Halacha is like the Tanakama. And with that, we finish the Perek HaDonalach HaMevi Kama.